We spent the last several weeks studying the books of 1 and 2 Timothy. So now we're in the final chapter of 2 Timothy. This is 2 Timothy chapter 4. And this last chapter finds Paul in his last days on this earth. This is the second trial, and I think he is well aware of the outcome that's coming. I think he knows he has a few days. So when he writes this letter to Timothy, he is trying to do his best to convince Timothy to do his best, to remain steadfast in the faith. And this has been a constant reminder of Paul to Timothy throughout both of these books. Paul is well aware that he is alone, except for Luke, who was with him. Everybody else had deserted him, and he's now expecting his life to end every day. Who is the emperor at the time? Do we know?
Yes, Nero.
Nero is the emperor. In 64, I believe it is. I can't remember now. I studied it a little bit and got the exact date. But he actually set the city on fire and caused this great fire in the city that cost a lot of people's lives. And most people, at least educated people that knew about Nero and knew what he was like, close enough to him to know what he was like, knew that he set this fire. But when you have a guy like this that's in overall control, you don't bump heads with him, do you? You got to be careful about him because he's going to do you in. So he needed an excuse. So who did he blame? Blame the Christians, didn't he? They didn't have a very popular reputation in the city of Rome, or Italy for that matter, in the Roman provinces. So it was easy to blame them for this fire. And I think that that ultimately is the thing that cost Paul his life. Paul says that Demas has abandoned him and gone to Macedonia. He sent some of his disciples to other regions for one reason or another, maybe to get them away from harm's way as far as they possibly can go, so that they won't suffer the same execution that he's going to suffer. One of those that he sent was Titus. And Titus is the person that we will be studying about starting next week. And there are some sheets back there about our introduction to Titus. So be sure and pick one of those up before you leave today. And we'll look at Titus, one of Paul's faithful companions. Paul has sent Titus to Dalmatia. This is a region in Asia Minor that Paul had spent some time in that area. And there were some churches there. Anybody know where Dalmatia was? It was a Roman province. You know where? You know what it is today? Still called Dalmatia by some people. But this is Croatia. in that area. Where's Mount Ararat? Armenia, part of Armenia. So that is the area that he sent Titus to. Let's look at question number one in our series today. What did Paul charge Timothy with?
To preach the word.
Okay. Preach the word.
In season and out.
In season and out. Charles? Okay.
Be ready.
Yeah, be ready. Always in season and out. Why is Paul telling Timothy, warning him about me? She's saying, Charles, do you have a hand up?
I was just going to, this answers your question. It says there come a time when they will not endure sound doctrine and will want to have their ears stickled and they'll turn aside to myths. So there's coming a time when you're going to see this, and it, since you know about it ahead of time, you're not going to be discouraged. You're prepared.
But, you know, Paul has been warning throughout both 1st and 2nd Timothy. Paul's been warning him of this very same thing, hasn't he? He's talking about being steadfast all the time. Staying steadfast in the faith. And he's gone through 1st and 2nd Timothy warning him about some of the things that he is going to deal with. What? He says to reprove, to rebuke, to exhort. What is the difference between reprove and rebuke? Kind of an interesting thing, these two words. There must have been a difference because Paul says to reprove and also rebuke. Do we know what the difference in these two words are? I looked up several places about these two words. They were almost identical as far as the definitions were concerned. A whole bunch of different words that, you know, banging heads, beat the dickens out of them, that type of thing, you know. But all kinds of violent word. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, when you reprove somebody, and think about the person has good intentions, honest intentions, that they're just maybe misinformed. They're open to whatever you're doing, but reproof is, to me, is more like rebuke is more like you're really trying to get their attention to tell them, no, you're going on the wrong way. It's more forceful to me.
Yeah, I think that reproof probably has a more gentle approach, maybe, than rebuke, which might be sharply criticizing. Slapping somebody upside the head and saying, hey, wake up. You know.
But you have to slap them with love.
Yeah. Why should Timothy do these things?
Because people didn't want sound doctrine.
Yeah.
They wanted to go off. Falsehood.
Because the time is coming when nobody will endure sound doctrine. And I think that this has been a constant problem. And then that's one of the reasons why Timothy was sent to Ephesus. Because Paul knew that he had enough expertise. Paul knew that he had enough experience that he could trust him to do what was right. He was steadfast in the faith, and so Paul had every confidence in Timothy to put him there. Ephesus was having problems. Ephesus was in an area where there was a tremendous amount of worship for idols, gods, this type of thing here. It was a major city that had various highways coming in and going out of. It wasn't far from the ocean. And so it had a lot of traffic, had a lot of foreign people coming in and going out. And, of course, there were a lot of different religions or thoughts that popped up, gods and so forth like this, that they had to deal with. Also, Ephesus was what, a Jewish city? Was it a Jewish city, primarily Jews? No. Wasn't. This was in Asia Minor. There was a Jewish synagogue there. There were Jewish people there. There were Jewish people who were Christians there. But it was primarily a Gentile city, a Greek city. What do we know about the problem that cropped up there about two guys who were preaching, that were preaching the resurrection had already come, second coming of Christ had already come? Who was preaching that? Okay, I'll ask that again in a couple of minutes. But anyway, here is Paul encouraging Timothy to stay steadfast in the faith, in spite of all the problems that he is going to run into, and in spite of the problems that he's already having. He's saying no matter what comes about, no matter what happens, stay faithful. My life is just about over with. But yours, your young man, you need to stay steadfast, preach the word always, reading always, reproving, rebuking, and exhorting. You know, Paul he suffered a lifetime of suffering, hardship, and he recounts so many of the things that happened to him over his lifetime. How many times he'd been shipwrecked. How many times he'd been afloat on the sea. How many times he'd been whipped. How many times he'd been stolen. It was incredible, the suffering and the abuse that he had to put up with. So he concludes his warnings in his own way. And remember in what he says in 2 Timothy 4, I fought the good fight. I won the race. Therefore, the crown of righteousness has been laid up for me, and not only me, but all those that love his appearing. Question number three. In spite of these difficulties, what should Timothy do?
Be ready.
I'm sorry?
Be ready.
Yeah. How about being sober in all things? What does that mean? Don't drink. Is that what that means? Don't imbibe.
Be sound mind. Yes.
Don't be trivial about it, right?
She said,
don't
be sound.
Treat this lightly. Don't be trivial.
Ruth said to be sound mind.
I'm sorry?
Be of sound mind.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't turn this up so I could hear some of the comments. Some of you ladies have such nice soft voices, it's hard to hear. Get somebody like Bob or somebody like that who yells, and it's okay. I turn my hearing aids down. Just pick another one.
Speak up to be heard.
That's exactly right. What kind of hardships did Paul tell Timothy that he was going to endure? And there's already some troublemakers in this congregation there in Ephesus. And we're going to see them pop up. And Paul is going to mention them. And they're there already in the congregation in Ephesus, or had been, people who were members of the church there. Paul tells Timothy to continue to work as an evangelist. Can anybody describe what an evangelist is? Different from a preacher?
Not necessarily, but it does carry the concept of one going out.
Yeah, and I think that there were several cities in and around Ephesus, nearby cities, towns, that Timothy also spent time in. And so he was an evangelist, and it does connotate somewhat a person who goes from place to place and ministers to more than one congregation. And I think Timothy probably did that. But he also says to fulfill your ministry. He was appointed by Paul. He was taught by Paul. Brought up in the faith. Now remember his parents, his mother, and his grandmother, who were Jewish, and they taught Timothy from his young years. Also brought him up in the faith, but when he was very young, Paul came by and recruited him, took him with him. And so Paul taught him, gave him experience, and he grew in faith and knowledge because he accompanied Paul in much of his travel. Question number four, why does Paul feel secure in his reward? We pretty well answered that question number two, didn't we? He felt secure because he had spent the bulk of his life. We've got to remember that Paul is getting up in years now when he's in Rome and spending his last days there. But one comment. When I in my study, one comment that one man made was, Paul spent so much time in the Lord's service and was so sincere that when he lost his head in Rome, after he had greeted Jesus where he was at God, first person that he ran to apologize to was Stephen. If you look back in Acts all stood by while Stephen was stoned to death. So I thought that was kind of an interesting comment. Just as a sideline, I kind of stuck with it. And, what is false reward? Yes,
being with God.
Yeah.
And having salvation.
Yeah.
Salvation.
Crown of righteousness been laid up for me. Yeah. He's fought the good fight. He's won the race. What does that mean, too? Does that have a, when he's running the race, what does that mean? Yes, Christian.
I mean, I would think that it was, he did what Jesus asked him to do. He spread the word. He lived his life as a righteous person. And I mean, that was his race. I mean, that was his calling, his duty. That was, you know, that's what he decided that he wanted to do. So that's, he did it well.
Yeah. And, you know, Paul also talks about rules of the race, doesn't he? And he says, man, a runner is not going to win and get the crown unless he obeys the rules of the race.
Yeah.
Yes,
sir. One of the things, buffeting your body daily, you're training for this. It's not something that you're just doing on the side. This is a purpose. This is a focus that you have. You're running the race. You're not in the race unless you're dedicated to it.
And there's a reward.
And there's a reward.
Is this an example that we need to follow today?
Pretty much.
Yeah. There are certain rules that we need to abide by in our race for eternal life. There are certain things that we need to do. If we cheat, we're going to run a shortcut or something like that. We're going to get ourselves into deep trouble. Aren't we? Yes, Paul.
One of the most important things that Paul says is that he kept the faith. And if you're a Christian, there's no retirement.
Yeah.
And sometimes as you get older and you get tired and you get maybe a little discouraged, it's easy for a person's faith to slip without one really actually realizing it.
Yeah.
And so we end up taking the easy way out on things instead of, oh, you know, maybe I just need to try harder because I want to keep the faith.
Friday morning, we had a memorial service for one of the finest ladies that I've ever known. That was one of the things that she always said, I'm tired. But I need to always remember that I need to do the Lord's will. Satan is making me tired. Always blame the bad stuff on Satan.
It is.
She never said anything that would be considered a derogatory statement about God and the reward that she knew she had coming. I think she was anxious to go. But she was an inspiration to me and will be the rest of my life. When I find my faith flagging, all I have to do is remember Carolyn Brown.
Yeah.
And it will just give me a pick-me-up. And, yes, sir.
1 Corinthians 9 describes the race a little bit. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we are imperishable. So I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified.
Yeah, that tells us exactly what we need to do to win the race, though. And as we study these things, Timothy, 1 Timothy, and as we will be studying in Titus as well, these things are effective for us today, just like they were 2,000 years ago. There's not any difference. Time difference, yes. Situations come and go, but things just don't change, do they? I was thinking when John was here this morning talking about the Lord's Supper, and I was thinking about how often we partake of the Lord's Supper, and how often some of these denominations take the Lord's Supper twice a year, maybe Christmas and Easter. Long time in between. And, or maybe even once a month, once every quarter, whatever. And very seldom do they have Lord's Supper on the first day of every week. And what is that for? That is to, what did Jesus tell us to do? Do this in my memory. How long is our memory? Mine keeps getting shorter all the time. Anyway, it's really great that we take the time each Lord's Day to remember Christ and remember the suffering that he did for us. And the plan, that plan's for us. Doesn't want any of us to perish. But if our faith flags, we let down our guard, let Satan give it to us. And it's, I look back on some of the things that I did. I wish I could forget them, but I can't. But I'm glad that the Lord was willing to die for me and so that I might be able to look for that home when it comes my time. I know that God has forgiven me for those things, but you can't forget it. They always crop up in your memory. And you have to be thankful that the Lord has provided a way for us to have that eternal home. Paul asked Timothy to come to Rome as soon as he possibly could. Did Timothy go?
Well, we don't really know, but I hope so.
Yeah. Well, you remember he told Timothy to bring the parchments and the book.
And
bring his coat because it's coming on winter time. Remember that?
Yeah.
So he had fully expected Timothy to come to him in Rome. But you're right. We're not given that information on him. Who was Paul mentions here in Timothy 4, chapter 4. Who was Alexander the coppersmith?
He didn't fall much far in being opposed to the gospel that follows teaching.
Okay.
I had to Google him because I didn't know who he was. And it says in Acts 19:25-27 that it possibly could be him, where he was somebody who followed Paul for a while and spread his word because he was a Jew and
not that that matters, but he was with Paul for a while, but then he, Paul made some of the other metal workers or other people mad, and so they kind of spoke to Alexander, and he kind of started getting in with them, and at least that's what in Acts 19 kind of says, that he started following his own ways and got greedy, and so, and then started to oppose Paul and his teachings because he was following man instead of God.
He talks about this by doing him much evil. He was a member of the church in Ephesus. And so Timothy was well aware of this guy. It was interesting that Paul actually pronounced judgment on this guy. Said that he's going to get his reward. But in 1 Timothy, to remember, Paul rebuked a couple of people, Hymenaeus and Alexander, for teaching the second coming of Christ and resurrection had already happened. This is probably the same Alexander, the coppersmith, who was just teaching bad doctrine, and Paul rebuked him and Hymenaeus for their causing discord in the church there at Ephesus. Paul may have rebuked him to such a degree that he looked upon taking personal revenge against Paul. And some scholars are even telling us that he went to Rome to testify against Paul, and so may have sealed Paul's fate there in Rome. He just had a chip on his shoulder. Kind of interesting. I remember back in the 80s, summer, some of you folk might remember, there were a couple of TV evangelists, and they were in competition with one another. So one of them says, hey, this guy, I'm not going to tell you I'm jealous of him because of all of his following, but he's having an affair with the and it got exposed. So he ruined this guy's reputation. This guy says, well, I'm going to get you in revenge. You're hiring prostitutes in New Orleans. I don't know if you guys remember who those guys are. They're back on campus after a lot of years. One of them went to jail, Jim Baker. And the other one still has his own TV program, Jimmy Swaggart. But they were at each other's throats. And they had a personal revenge in mind. And I didn't know if you remembered that or not. How many people came together with Paul in his defense? Anybody?
Six.
Well, in 16, it says that no one supported him in his first defense.
Nobody hung around.
But the Lord did, because he got him through it.
Well, yes, the Lord did. Does this remind you of somebody else that lost all their followers because of a dire situation?
Yes, Jesus.
Pardon?
Jesus.
Yeah. Just remind you of when Jesus was taken in the garden.
They scattered.
I'm sorry?
They scattered.
Yeah. Not anybody. It wasn't a soul that saved. What about Peter?
He denied.
Yeah, because it all Lord, all by glory to God. Well, Peter, what did Jesus say to Peter on, before the cock crows?
Three times.
Three times you were denied. Is this what happened to Paul? Yeah. Same thing happened to Paul. I've always thought, too, that Paul was present when Jesus was arrested. Never tells us that, but I think that he was there because he was part of that group.
I don't know.
So, I think probably, well, we know that Paul sent somebody away. I think we kind of touched base that a little bit earlier. Paul had sent Titus to Dalmatia. He sent some of his other close acquaintances there. He sent out of town too. And I think that a lot of this was just to get him out of harm's way as much as he possibly could.